Hello, and welcome to the 11th edition of the Next Man Up podcast. My name is Logan Wortman. On this episode, we will continue going through my off-season grades for each NBA team. But first, I just thought I would record a little something at the top here, just to react to the crazy NBA news that dropped last night, which was the somewhat comically rumored but seemingly far-fetched scenario in which John Wall and Russell Westbrook would be traded for one another. And I really just wanted to take the time to just completely break down this trade and why it's so crazy and important just for everybody listening. And then we're going to jump into the rest of the offseason grades, well, at least the next five teams on the list is what I think we're going to be going through today. And very coincidentally, the Houston Rockets are the very next team on the list. They're the first one scheduled to do for this episode, just going on, you know, alphabetical order by the team's location. And so I actually already recorded these five teams and their off-season grades or breakdowns, you know, that I've been doing. I actually recorded all five of these the other day, but luckily enough, I was still editing this episode, not really finished yet, when this news broke. So I'm able to attach this, you know, new information that greatly affects my breakdown of the Houston Rockets offseason. So, you know, so that's pretty lucky that it happened right at this perfect time. So I'm basically just going to redo my breakdown of the Houston Rockets offseason, but I'll basically break it down by each move they did. Like what I was thinking when they made each move, how that moved the needle for me, where I thought they were going. Because Houston, like I've been saying for a while now, has been definitely one of the most unpredictable teams this offseason. You know, even just right after the playoffs ended, I said that, you know, Houston's just going to be a really weird team to gauge on what kind of moves, what they're going to do this offseason, just because they're a team that they're kind of stuck, and you know, there's things that they can do, but none of the things seem very enticing. That's kind of like the situation they're in. Like they don't have a lot of like very glamorous options, especially with the people that have left the organization just this past season. And another one of the big reasons why I think the Houston Rockets are kind of stuck in like a limbo scenario for a basketball franchise is their lack of picks that they have, which, you know, that segues us right into the trade talk, to the discussion about this trade in particular, because that's really, you know, from the Houston Rockets scenario, that's really the win that you get out of this trade. You know, this is a move that really looks like not a win now move. It's more of a rebuilding move, and a sad one at that. But like Westbrook, I don't think had much of a trade market. I don't think there was a demand out there from any of these Eastern Conference teams that were rumored to have an eye out for Westbrook, like the Knicks, like the Hornets, like Orlando. I don't think that really any of those teams were going to be giving up anything that, you know, at least surpassed what they've got from Washington. So there just wasn't really much out there in terms of shopping Westbrook around, I'd assume. And that's really what led to this, you know. And so in Houston's eyes, making the case for Houston winning this trade, I don't necessarily agree with that. I'm just going to make the case for both sides of why you could talk yourself into each side winning this trade. On Houston's end, you know, you're getting back a first round pick in 2023. It is top 12, I think, protected or lottery protected, something like that. For the next like 6 years, but the protections keep getting lighter and lighter on each one. So at best, this pick will be the ninth pick in the draft at best. And that it can only be the ninth pick if it's in 2026 also. So, you know, for people that don't understand how like the lottery protection rules and stuff like that work on picks, you know, it's something that most people don't really understand. I didn't understand it for a long time until very recently. So it's like when a team trades a pick, they put a protection on it for like a certain zone in the draft where it can end up. And if it ends up higher than, you know, the cutoff of the protection, then the team that originally was trading the pick gets to keep it. So with this pick, Washington is trading it to Houston. But in the 2023 draft, after, you know, the standings and everything, and the lottery's all determined, the draft order and everything's all set in regards to the team's record in the 2022 and 2023 season, if this pick in the 2023 draft falls in the lottery, meaning the Washington Wizards didn't make the playoffs in the 2022-2023 season, you know, then the pick would fall in the lottery and Washington Wizards would still get to make their selection with that pick for their own team. Like, they get to keep that pick, basically. But since that pick, you know, didn't go to Houston, since it didn't fall in the 15-30 pick range, then Houston gets to have another crack at it the next season. So in the 2024 draft, there's a similar scenario. But in this scenario, you know, it's like top 12 protected instead of top 14. So if now, if the pick falls in the 13 or 14 slot, so they barely missed the playoffs most likely, and they were ended at the, you know, very bottom end of the lottery, basically, then Houston would actually get to make that selection at the 12 or 13 spot. But, you know, if it falls within the top 12, same thing as last year. And it keeps going like that. If it just keeps falling in the protected range every season all the way up till 2026, then it's a top 8 protected, so the highest they can get is 9. But after the 2026 season, if it never falls outside of the protected range, which is very unlikely, but if that were to happen, then Houston would just get no pick. They would have basically been really unlucky with the odds of that, and they don't have a pick from that trade. They just had the chance of it 6 years in a row, basically. But yeah, best case scenario, in 6 years, they're going to have a 9th pick. Well, I don't know if that's best case scenario since it's so far away, but in terms of the highest it can be in the draft, they have a 9th pick in 6 years. Or 15th pick this year, you know, 13th pick next year, you know, keep going like that, basically, I think is how it is. I'm not sure exactly the zones that are protected on it precisely, but it is something very close to that. So hopefully that all made sense and wasn't, you know, too rambly, which it probably was, but, you know, that's just what I do here. But yeah, back to making the case for Houston's upside in this trade. You know, they get that chance at a pretty decent pick, most likely, you know, at some point within the next 6 years. And then they also get the hopes that John Wall will be, you know, a decent player this upcoming couple seasons, which, you know, is a huge question mark. John Wall hasn't played in over 2 years now. He hasn't played an NBA game in over 2 years, and that's just because of injuries that he's endured, like mainly the Achilles tear that he suffered, I think, like a year and a half ago, something like that, which he suffered while he was already out for something else, like a torn quad or something like that. Yeah, so that was just a really unlucky thing for John Wall. You know, John Wall was one of the premier point guards in the NBA. You know, he was a pretty ball-dominant player, not near to the level that Russell Westbrook is, and that's, you know, another part that kind of wins in this trade, you know, him being definitely like upgrade in terms of shooting off of Russell Westbrook, but not by much, because John Wall's still not, you know, any type of like a player you need to really pay attention to off ball around the perimeter. But, you know, it being multiple years since he's played, that might have changed with him getting some reps in terms of shooting and working on his form and everything like that. So maybe he comes back an even better shooter, who knows. But he also definitely, even before the injury, was not as high usage as Russell Westbrook was. So in terms of fitting alongside Harden, just on paper, seems like a little bit better of just a scenario fit-wise. But it's really where, you know, the talent is gonna be, the level of talent, how much he really helps you in terms of winning games. You know, you could see him maybe matching Westbrook at best, you know, coming back and being as good of a player Westbrook was last season, which was a very good player, by the way. He ended up third team All NBA, which I, you know, would have like to see Chris Middleton in there instead of him, but still, he was a worthy candidate of third team All NBA. That's, you know, the level that he played at. So, you know, John Wall matching that is kind of, seems a little far fetched in terms of the injury that he endured, being an Achilles tear, being like the most dreaded injury in all of basketball, especially for a player like John Wall, being an uber athletic, like smooth finishing point guard. He's just like, you know, take the ball the length of the floor faster than just about anybody ever. Russell Westbrook is in that category also, which is just kind of funny that these two players got traded for each other. They're both like aging out of their prime, uber athletic point guards that have nice size on the defensive end. John Wall, at their peak, John Wall's definitely the better defender. And I'd say the better passer also, but Russell Westbrook definitely a better scorer and rebounder as well. So, you know, at their peaks, Westbrook's probably reached an altitude that John Wall probably hadn't. But there's also just this just different aura of John Wall as a basketball player that is just really entertaining to watch as well. You know, I think he's been a very underrated point guard even at his peak. So, yeah, I guess in Houston's eyes, the win for this trade is maybe, you make this trade at the hopes of maybe John Wall is very serviceable and does help you win games, and that convinces Harden to maybe stay. Because I did see that an article, I don't know if this is true or not, but there was a report that in James Harden's words, or you know, somebody's led to believe that James Harden said he wanted John Wall there instead of Russell Westbrook. He preferred John Wall as a teammate this upcoming season instead of Russell Westbrook. He wanted that. So apparently they made this trade, it looks like, after that report, if it's true, to appease Harden. Before I heard that, I thought for sure this trade meant Harden is out the door. They're going to, you know, because they basically just flipped an asset for a worse asset in John Wall. But along with it came a pretty decent asset and a future pick. And that is definitely like a rebuilding type of asset, especially with their catalog of picks that they have coming up being very, very limited. So yeah, I have no idea what to think. You know, my gut tells me this is a move that means they're rebuilding and they're going to move James Harden. They're going to move James Harden very, very soon. I think by the start of next season, next NBA season, the 2021-2022 season, I'd assume that James Harden is no longer with the team. But there's also the world that exists in which John Wall may show out and may have a comeback. Again, very unlikely after an Achilles tear. Kobe was never the same. Plenty of players have never been the same. DeMarcus Cousins, who's on this team, the Houston Rockets, and former, you know, college teammate of John Wall, which is kind of cool seeing them come back together. But, you know, he suffered an Achilles tear also and has never been the same since. It's just happened to plenty of different players, and nobody's come back the same. The only player that has really come close was Dominique Wilkins, and he was definitely a very different player after he came back. He was still an effective player, but he was a very different player. And that, I'd say that is what you're hoping for if you're a Houston Rockets fan right now from out of John Wall, or, you know, if you're a John Wall fan, that's what you're hoping for, is that John Wall comes back a different player, adjusts his game to be still very effective, accounting for his new level of explosiveness, which is probably going to be dampened after this, you know, Achilles rupture and, you know, the rehab he's gone through since that. So I definitely expect, just with age now, him being like 32, I think now, 31 or 32, on top of him having this Achilles rupture, his explosiveness and speed is not going to be at the same level that it was. But, you know, even if you take John Wall's speed down 10-15%, he's still one of the faster guys in the league. Still going to be a very quick player. That's how speedy he was before he got injured. He was the fastest player in the NBA. So that's another thing that's really funny about this trade, is if this happened, this exact trade happened in like 2015 or something like that, this would be a very different kind of trade. Like, this would be just, it would be wild, but even more, it would be so much more wild. It'd be like on a completely different level, like two basically MVP caliber point guards. You know, obviously Russell Westbrook won a very controversial MVP award, and John Wall has been in the, you know, top five or six in terms of MVP race a couple times, but never really had the winning to back that up. But anyways, you know, switching guys like that would be just a very different conversation. We would be excited about this in a very different kind of way. Now it seems like a very sad type of trade. It's like, okay, like you just swapped two of the worst contracts in the league for one another. And the Houston Rockets are calling it rebuilding, just because they're getting a pick along with it. You know, like I've already broken down, there is like logic to that. You know, there is like a thing that makes sense. You know, you're getting John Wall back. Maybe he'll be a great player. If not, you still have a pick, and you're going to probably move off Harden if John Wall is not, you know, producing at a high level this upcoming season. But yeah, and in terms of Washington, you know, I'm going to get to Washington later in this series, definitely towards the end, obviously, because Washington, I think, is last alphabetically in location. But I think that they won this. They're easier to convince yourself of winning this trade just because, you know, in this Eastern Conference, trying to make a playoff spot, if that's what you want as a Washington Wizards fan, or as the franchise, you know, you're definitely going to have a better chance of that. Most likely, like a better betting odds. You know, I'm not saying that Russell Westbrook for sure is going to be a better player than John Wall this upcoming season. Like I said before, that could, you know, not be the case in it, but that's very unlikely. I would say the most likely scenario is Russell Westbrook is still the better player this upcoming season. And, you know, adding Russell Westbrook to that Washington Wizards team from last year, who was without Wall in the first place, is definitely going to be an upgrade. And Bradley Beal being a player that can be very effective on the ball and off the ball, and Russell Westbrook just coming off a season where he did have to share the ball much more than he has in a long time with James Harden, is going to be, you know, a interesting scenario. It's going to be something that I could see, you know, them producing some wins, getting, you know, a playoff berth in this Eastern Conference, which is hyper competitive now compared to last year. You know, there's basically top seven teams here that are on lock for sure, maybe even top eight now, so, you know, with the addition of the Atlanta Hawks. You know, like our friend Jacob says, he would make them a top four seed. But, you know, I think for sure you've got the Bucks, Celtics, Nets, Raptors, Heat. This is in no particular order. Philadelphia and Indiana. There's seven that most people are going to put locks for the playoffs. The only one I'd be really unsure about that with is Indiana. Just because, you know, if they keep their roster currently constructed, then yeah, sure, I'll throw them in there at the seven spot. But I don't know if this roster is going to stay intact with some of the drama that's been around it. And, you know, I think we actually go over Indiana in this episode. So just, yeah, stay tuned for that. But and then at eight, you'd probably have to throw Atlanta in there before this trade happened, before this Russell Westbrook trade happened. And now, you know, now it's up for debate of Atlanta or Washington should be there at the eighth spot. And now, you know, with the addition of the play-in tournament, having the top 10 seeds actually eligible for the playoffs, you know, at the end of the season, the 10 seed, I believe, plays the 7 seed and the 8 seed plays the 9 seed. You know, the higher seed has to win one game. The lower seed has to win two. So at most they're playing two games. But yeah, that determines what team goes into the playoff spot at that 7 and 8 seed. So technically, you know, making the 9 and 10 seed, you still have a puncher's chance at making it in there, which I think is going to be really entertaining. I really like this addition of the play-in tournament. It spices up the end of the season stuff, especially for the lower seeds in the playoffs. But yeah, the Washington Wizards having a better chance of being competitive in the playoffs this upcoming season is definitely, you know, the reasoning behind, you would say, the Wizards have won this trade. You know, they got Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal now playing together. I don't know. You know, Bradley Beal's a super loyal guy, it seems, wanting to stay in Washington. So I don't know with this trade if he is still, you know, wanting to stay here. For a while, I really thought Bradley Beal was going to be moved. I guess I just don't know with him at this point, but you know, because he seems like such a loyal guy that he would want to stay. But just in terms of a perfect, you know, basketball situation, I think there is much better scenarios for Bradley Beal to be in than rotting away his prime in Washington. He is a super competitive winning player that elevates his play in the playoffs. And I think that there are lots of contending teams that could really use him, and he would be very entertaining on. So I really like the fit of him in Miami or something like that. But yeah, anyways, yeah, in terms of who won this trade, you know, I've heard multiple people say that everybody lost this trade, like both parties, every party involved lost this trade. Or I've heard people say that the fans are the people that have won this trade, just people watching basketball and enjoying this weird just trade, were the ones who won. Yeah, I guess I agree with all of it. It's just, it's a wild, weird, funky trade. So, but yeah, I guess I'll get into now, like, the, you know, off season of the Houston Rockets as a whole. Just, you know, going off the top of my head right now, with Houston, you know, at the start of the off season, I was really unsure of their direction. Like I said before, they have James Harden, they have Russell Westbrook, but I knew that Mike D'Antoni was probably not returning. And very shortly, you know, after the playoffs, did announce that he was not going to, you know, re-sign with the team. He was deciding to move on. And Mike D'Antoni is such a huge part of the identity and style there at the Houston Rockets. And they're built a very, like, specific way to play a certain style that Mike D'Antoni is the only guy as a coach that I really would trust with a roster like that, playing like that. So, and then, so Mike D'Antoni moves on. Then there's huge questions about, you know, what is Daryl Morey going to do? And, you know, what is this organization going to do as a whole? And I really thought for the longest time that, I was like, Daryl Morey is probably going to be moving on. I kind of actually called that out. Even going to the Sixers was like, I said the day before he stepped down from Houston, before there was even any word of that, I was saying that I really want Daryl Morey to just leave and go to Philly. And he would just rebuild and make that roster work. Because, you know, I've always said Embiid and Simmons can work together. People say they can't. They can work together. It's just more complicated to build around than if you're building around one of them. It's easier to build around one of them, but if you're building around both of them, you have to do it a very specific there's a right way to do it. And Daryl Morey is like the guy that comes to mind that I was like, that guy knows how to do that. In terms, you know, building around stars and building around a pair of stars like that. I think that Daryl Morey is the guy that I would trust with forming a roster like that, not Elton Brand, who is their GM right now, still technically, but they're working together now, and it seems like Daryl Morey is driving the decisions that have been made over the past month or so. But anyways, Mike D'Antoni and Daryl Morey both move on, and at this point, I'm like, okay, Houston's even more interesting than they were before. You know, I already had an inkling of what are they going to do now. They've kind of reached somewhat of an impasse. Now this is a full-blown impasse. What's going on? They have to do something. And I think the first thing they did this offseason was they traded off of Robert Covington. They traded him to Portland, really just to clear up cap space, I think. And so, you know, my initial thought with that was like, okay, now they're trying to free up some space to do some stuff this offseason in free agency, sign some people to really build, you know, somewhat of a roster that you can push into the playoffs in this Western Conference, led by James Harden and maybe Russell Westbrook if he's going to stay. So that was kind of the direction I was leaning towards of what I thought they were going to do. And that was really backed up. That theory was really backed up by the signing of Christian Wood and DeMarcus Cousins, even. You know, the signing of Christian Wood, I loved for the Rockets. Just, you know, before this trade happened, before the Westbrook trade, having Westbrook, Harden in there at the guard spots, with Eric Gordon in there and PJ Tucker, and then Christian Wood at the five, you know, you have a real five now that you haven't had since Clint Capela. And this is a rim running type of big, a guy that can rebound, can block shots, and can roll to the rim in a pick and roll scenario. Which James Harden loves to have a teammate that fits that mold, as we've seen over the years with like Dwight Howard and Clint Capela. But on top of that, on top of those skills that that Christian Wood provides, he has another skill that neither Dwight Howard or Clint Capela or any rim runner that James Harden has played with before, I believe, has ever possessed, and that is a 3-point shot that you need to respect. You know, he's like a 3 of 8 type of shooter, you know, 0.375 percentage, you know, type of shooter. And So adding that whole new dimension of it in there, having, you know, a guy that can roll to the rim, and catch lobs. If you pay too much attention to Harden on the, you know, as the initiator in the pick and roll scenario, then he can lob it up, or he can stay back and pick and pop. So sneak behind the 3-point line, kind of flare out, and can get the kick out to shoot if he's left open. If his defender in the pick and roll scenario is hedging too hard to cover Harden as well, it's harder to do that now because you have a big with a threat to shoot if he flares out. So there's just more sharp edges to it that can hurt the defense in that pick and roll scenario, having a player with his skill set. And so I really like that for the Rockets, them acquiring Christian Wood. And then another reason why I really liked it is because now you have a easier way to have a big out there at the same time as having Russell Westbrook out there being your non-shooter. He's, you know, in that scenario, in that starting five, he's the only non-shooter on the floor, which works out much better. And, you know, he's also being, you know, like the co-pilot in the ball handling responsibilities with James Harden. So having, you know, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, PJ Tucker, Eric Gordon, and Christian Wood out there, like I said, would be a nice shooting team. Wood is also really good for them just because he, you know, allows them to maintain their switchability on defense that they've been doing for a while now, ever since they got rid of their center. He is a guy that can switch on to smaller guys and stay in front of them, you know, decently well. And then he also provides some rim protection. He's just a very versatile type of player. One of those unicorn type players that I was talking about for Denver, that we could get, you know, being a rim protector, being mobile enough to stay in front of guards, decently well, and, you know, play outside there, play there alongside a slow footed guy. So he can play at the four pretty easily as well. But, him being in there at the five is good too, because he provides good rim protection also, and has decent enough size there at the five. So he's just a very versatile type of player and provides a lot of nice wrinkles here with this Houston Rockets team. But, you know, they've also lost some players like Austin Rivers, Jeff Green, who both played pretty big minutes for them in the playoffs especially. They've also lost guys like Thabo Sefolosha, Tyson Chandler, Bruno Caboclo, Isaiah Hartenstein, some other guys too, I think. Again, I'm going off the top of my head right now just because my internet is actually down right now, so I can't look at anything for reference, but still recording. And now trading Russell Westbrook for John Wall initially did make me think that, you know, they're moving off of James Harden now. But, you know, now with the reports of James Harden actually wanted that to happen, and, you know, also the rumors that John Wall is adding a 3-point shot, that those have been rumors of him playing in pickup games in Los Angeles and stuff like that with other NBA players, that he's looking good in terms of 3-point shooting. And also being, I think, more willing to play off ball usually throughout his career than Russ Westbrook has been in John Wall. So that does kind of make sense the more that I think about it. And having that lineup out there instead, and with the hopes that John Wall is, you know, not a complete shell of his former self, then, yeah, that would be a very enticing roster in this Western Conference, you know, to at least make a push for the playoffs. You know, having James Harden on your roster, I'm sure you're going to make the playoffs. But, you know, this West is super competitive with the addition of Chris Paul to the Suns. But, you know, they basically replace OKC in there. So you got Lakers, Clippers, Nuggets, Mavs, Jazz. So that's five. Golden State's coming back, Phoenix, Houston, so that's eight. And then you got, like, New Orleans, Memphis, Portland. Portland's a big team. I forgot about them. They should probably be much higher up there. You know, this West is just stacked. There's a lot of teams to go through. So I can definitely see the idea of Houston just selling everything, you know, getting off of everything just to rebuild. But I still do like, if they're trying to win, I still do like the moves they've made for the most part, you know. So, yeah, with Houston, obviously we still don't know what to expect really, but it's clearer than it was before. And I think that Raphael Stone, as the new GM there in Houston, has done a pretty good job starting out, making some decent moves. So Yeah, and I actually think that I'm going to run this as its own episode, apart from the NBA free agency breakdowns. Like, so I did do the like Houston Rockets in this one, so it's going to obviously take them off the list. But, you know, I think this is a big enough trade, and it's already like a long enough thing that I can just run this as its own episode and move on and do the other ones later. I think I'm going to re-record those other four that I did anyways, which I think is like, it was like Indiana, the two LA teams, and Memphis. I was really tired when I recorded them, and you know, I have, just listening back to them, I have a much better energy recording this part, the Houston part, than I do in those ones. So yeah, I'm going to have to really get a good time for me to record those and in a nice and digestible way where I feel like it's, you know, good content being put out. So I guess stay tuned for that. But I guess it also, just since, you know, this is its own episode now, I'm going to touch on other news really quick. Like Steph Curry, apparently, they're and Under Armour, they're launching a new Curry brand, similar to like Jordan with Nike, I think. So that's interesting. Also, I think Joakim Noah retired from basketball, so that's another thing. Anthony Davis agreed to his 5-year $190 million deal to stay with the Lakers, which that should be like front page news also, with this other stuff I was talking about. And that's less than the max, I think. 5-year $190 million, that puts him at, like, let's see, quick math, like $38 million a year. And so $38 million annually, which that's definitely less than what he's eligible for. Just cause, you know, Giannis is able to sign Supermax this offseason for like 46, something like that, 46 to 47 million, something like that annually. So, and Anthony Davis should be able to sign for the same amount, I think. But anyways, so maybe he's doing that to free up cap space for LA moving forward. I don't know. I know that, LeBron also signed an extension, basically to match up to make his next free agency period when, Bronny would be coming into the NBA, theoretically, his son. So, that's pretty interesting. and then, in other news, COVID-19 stuff with the NBA, you know, apparently out of all the players tested, it was like 456 or something like that, 48 of the players tested positive for COVID-19. So, you know, that's another headline. And then another thing I wanted to touch on really quick, I just was looking at something with the Hawks, so it just dawned on me again. But when I covered the Hawks in the other episode, I think it was the first one, yeah, obviously, because Atlanta. But I didn't really mention Cam Reddish or DeAndre Hunter very much at all. And I think those are other guys that are going to be needing minutes, that you're going to be wanting to have minutes, especially if you're trying to bolster the defensive end of your roster. And so that just adds to my point of like Atlanta just being a hodgepodge, just mess of players that I don't like. A lot of people are buying into because of the amount of talent there, but I'm not really buying into just because they don't seem like a roster that's going to work super well. Like literally like 1 through 15, like every single player on there, you look at them and you're like, that guy like deserves playing time. Like there's just so many guys. And also like, I don't know, like the lineups that it seems like they need to go with based on what they're paying people, like is going to be a very offensive unit, not very defensive. So yeah, I don't really know. But just wanted to touch on that really quick with Atlanta. Also another thing, LiAngelo Ball, the second Ball brother in between Lonzo and LaMelo, he actually signed a 10-day contract with the Pistons, so all three Ball brothers are on NBA rosters now. So that's fun. Another thing is Ty Lue actually apparently is asking Paul George and Kawhi to like take a step back on their special requests. That was a huge part of like the chemistry issues with the Clippers last season, of them getting kind of special treatment because of their caliber of talent. So he's trying to make them cut back on that and fix the chemistry issues that way, which I think is really cool. So it looks like good changes are being made from Ty Lue. We're going to have the Tampa Bay Raptors this upcoming season because, you know, the Raptors aren't allowed to play in Canada this upcoming season. They're not allowed to play games there. So they're actually going to be playing in Tampa. So that's going to be fun. They're not going to be called Tampa Bay Raptors, but that's probably what I'm going to call them. We have, like, some scheduling stuff kind of, like, tentatively set with Christmas Day and opening night games. Looks like, you know, Nets and Warriors are going to be playing on opening night, and Lakers Clippers are also going to be playing against each other opening night. So that's going to be really, really fun. Giannis's contract is still up in the air at this point, time that I'm recording this, whether or not he's going to extend. You know, even if he doesn't right now, I hear a lot of people saying, like, if he doesn't right now, that means he's leaving. I don't think that necessarily means he's leaving. If he doesn't right now, because there's a deadline coming up of which he can, yeah. But then after this next season's over, he can still sign with the Bucks. You know, it's not like just because he doesn't sign this extension doesn't mean he can't extend later. Doesn't mean he can't sign with the Bucks later. He can still sign with the Bucks in 2021. Not signing this extension now just keeps his options open. He can still very well, you know, dependent on how well this Bucks team plays this upcoming season. Just because he doesn't sign it now, I don't think that necessarily means he's gone. So there's that. But I just saw this thing, this headline that I literally just was talking about with Bradley Beal, how I liked him, like, in terms of going to Miami or something like that. There's a headline saying the Heat are interested in Beal, could focus on him if Giannis signs Supermax. So that's, you know, that's kind of cool. But yeah, other than that, the Heat have new jerseys, which is cool. Kemba Walker got some stem cell injections into his knee. So yeah, prayers up for Kemba. Hopefully he can keep his career going. I know, like, a player his size and with his skill set, having that kind of knee issue is very detrimental, you know, to your season, to your career. So especially at his age, you know, passing the age of 30. So yeah, yeah, definitely, for sure, prayers up for him. The Celtics hired Evan Turner as an assistant coach. Okay, so that's interesting, that to say the least. I think he played like 10 years, and he was like, he didn't win rookie of the year, I don't think, but he was in the discussion with the Sixers his rookie year. Like, he played well. I don't know. This is weird. It's a weird world. Evan Turner is now an assistant coach with the Celtics, but okay. Yeah, other than that, though, I think that's really it as far as NBA news goes. So I'm going to cut it off here. This will conclude the episode. Thank you guys for listening. Please make sure to stay tuned and check out more of the episodes coming up, me breaking down the other teams throughout the league and their off seasons, what I thought of them. So yeah, thank you guys for listening. Please make sure to like and subscribe and comment as well. And then follow the Spotify feed also. And yeah, thanks for listening, and I will talk to you guys next time.